Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock and heavy metal. Two national radio shows, best-selling books, and host of That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. Now, Eddie's bringing his honest, no-nonsense approach and passion to the world of podcasting. You'll hear commentary, analysis, celebrity guests, and who knows what else. PodcastOne.com presents The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Eddie Trunk Podcast. And yes, if you are listening to this and getting it the first day of posts, and you are in the U.S., it is Thanksgiving. So hope you have a great one today. And if you're listening to this after Thanksgiving, well, you're late. But thank you so much for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, downloading it, and catching it whenever you do eventually get to it. Greatly appreciated. And a lot of fun to have you guys on board and getting all the great response to this podcast each and every week. I read all the emails. Sometimes I can't get back to every single one of them, but I greatly appreciate hearing from you guys. You can email me, eddie@eddietrunk.com, or just hit the Contact Us section on my website, which by now you know is eddietrunk.com. You can even hear this podcast now streaming as well on my site if you just hit the podcast banner. But if you want to download it, that's the way to go. To do it through iTunes or podcastone.com. Subscribe to it on iTunes. You'll get it every Thursday automatically fed to your phone. A lot of great discussion and feedback and coverage of the podcast last week with Joe Satriani. A lot was made of Joe discussing Chickenfoot and if there was a future or not to that band. And, you know, I talk about this so many times. There are so many people now that are multitasking and have more than one band. And as a result, it's very, very hard for these guys to make music and then line up and go out on the road and make schedules around everybody. It is the biggest change in the music industry in the last couple of years that I've seen happen. Where you'd be hard pressed to find anybody who's just in one band now. And some of these side bands are good, some of them not so good, but it causes a problem because the band that is the focus, the priority, the big money maker is always going to win. Now, Chickenfoot is an interesting story because they actually had a lot of success. But Sammy Hagar's doing this other band now called The Circle, where he's playing Van Halen, Led Zeppelin, Montrose, his solo stuff. And that band is with Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, and his guitar player, Vic Johnson. And Sammy said in some interviews recently, he says, listen, I'm not going to go spend a ton of money, clear time, and go make a record that nobody buys, and I've got to go crazy to try to promote. It's a bad sign of what's happening. Some of these guys are so turned off because new music is so rarely accepted and so rarely breaks through that they just decide that they don't even want to be bothered with it. It really is a trend and something that's happening more and more often. So what Satriani said in last week's podcast was kind of revealing and interesting to a lot of people that he doesn't know if they can find the time to make it happen, but he still thinks Chickenfoot has some good music left. And I do think one day we'll see that band again. But, you know, Joe has a big solo career. Michael Anthony does his thing with Sammy solo. Obviously, Chad Smith isn't going to give up a paycheck with the Chili Peppers to go do Chickenfoot. That's a huge band. So it's a complicated thing to try to make these bands work. And as fans, it sucks because you get into them and there's really not a lot of follow through. At least Chickenfoot got a couple tours and a couple records out, and we'll see if they have more in the tank going forward. I'll try to get Sammy on for a podcast as well. He's a good friend and he's always very outspoken and honest, and I always appreciated that. I got some great podcasts coming up in the upcoming weeks. I really am excited to bring you a podcast with Bob Rock, the legendary producer. When I first started doing this podcast a number of weeks ago, I said we're really going to do some different stuff, talk to some people that aren't just musicians. Now, up to this point, it has been all musicians, and that's been great. But I want to get some of the industry side as well and get some different perspectives, things I can't do on TV and radio. And we're going to do that in a few weeks when I have a podcast with Bob Rock talking about all the amazing records that he has produced and been a part of. That'll probably post in about 2 or 3 weeks. I just recorded it. Dave Lombardo of Slayer is coming up. You don't want to miss that. Formerly of Slayer. That's next week, as a matter of fact. And that is exclusive to the podcast. Carmine Appice and Jolynn Turner together coming up in a couple weeks. Bob Rock as well. Great schedule continues. Again, new episodes every single Thursday of the Eddie Trunk podcast. You'll also notice that about 95% of the podcast to date have been exclusive, meaning they've only been done and made and premiered here on this podcast. However, from time to time, there will be podcasts that come from other sources, meaning that I recorded it at a remote location. Maybe I recorded it for my radio show and I'm repurposing it and using it here. The simple truth is I do 2 radio shows a week and this podcast and a TV show. So it's not always possible to get the time to interview somebody 2, 3, 4 times for the same project. So on rare occasions, I try to keep the podcast unique and special and exclusive to only here as far as at least premiering. But there's times that's not going to happen. And for 99% of people, they don't hear every single thing I do anyway. So it's fine. But just to be transparent, as I like to be about everything, tonight's podcast was actually recorded for my radio show. And it went so well that everybody who heard it said, you've got to make that a podcast. So that's what happened with tonight's. The next couple, exclusive and only done exclusively for the podcast, as most of them are. But what you're going to hear tonight, and by the way, I do want to go back, as I've been threatening, as soon as I can find them, and pull out some of my archived interviews, which you're going to love when we get into that. And we'll do that down the line. There's a lot of other stuff I want to do with this, and we'll take those turns as time goes on. Having Bob Rock is a big step in that direction. Some of the archived ones of interviews people never heard or haven't heard in 20 years will do that. So we're going to have some fun and do some different things as well. But thank you. The response has been off the hook for this thing. And all of you guys around the world, however you listen to this, thank you for doing so. Check out my website, eddietrunk.com. You can email me through the site, music news. My books are available that way. There's a merch store there. Read the Trunk Report, please. It's my blog. Let you know about that metal show, radio, and everything else. And it's very important you keep up with what's going on in that world through the blog, which is a much more in-depth way than Twitter or Instagram or Facebook that I can connect with you. I update it personally almost daily, the Trunk Report on eddietrunk.com. That metal show returns February 21st, 2015, to VH1 Classic. The interview you're going to hear today features two guys that are good friends, one of which I go back probably 30 years with. Scott Ian and the guys from Anthrax I've known forever. We kind of grew up on the New York scene together. Scott recently released his autobiography called I'm the Man, and we discussed that. And sitting in with me when we recorded this was Chris Jericho, my good friend, and of course, singer in Fozzy and the WWE star. And Chris happened to be there, and he's involved in this conversation you're going to hear as well. So two good friends, Scott I've known forever, and Chris I've known for a good period of time as well. And it was really a fun conversation that I think you guys are going to really enjoy. So Ian, Jericho, Trunk, the podcast for this week, stand by. That is coming up in a matter of minutes. Want to remind you once again, though, it is, of course, Thanksgiving now. It's the holiday season, full swing, and you know the deal with the holidays here and all the big ones just around the corner. You got to go to Amazon.com. It's the best place to go for all your shopping needs. Even better, Amazon helps support this podcast and keeps it free by offering my show a small commission on the products you purchase. So the next time you purchase something from Amazon, go to podcastone.com and click on the Keep It Free banner located at the top of the homepage. Click on my show's banner and you'll find Amazon as well as my other sponsors that help support this program. You can even use my Amazon banner if you're located in Canada or the UK. And to make it easier for all future purchases, please bookmark my Amazon URL. You know the deal, podcast1.com. Click on the Keep It Free banner to support Amazon and all the wonderful sponsors that help make this show possible and keep it free. All right, we're coming back. Chris Jericho, Scott Ian, this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope you enjoy it.
This is the Eddie Trunk podcast.
Is there anything worse than buying razors? Got to remember that you need them in the first place. You got to sit in traffic to the store. You got to find that locked plastic fortress they keep them in. You got to find the one guy with the key, and he's probably in the back texting his girlfriend. And after all that, it costs $25. Never doing that again. Join DollarShaveClub.com. For a few bucks a month, DollarShaveClub.com delivers great razors right to your door. DollarShaveClub.com is so much smarter than going to the store. Their plans start at just $3 a month. You sign up once, takes 2 minutes, then sit back and blades arrive like clockwork. You can shave with a fresh blade every week. No membership fee, no commitment. And they have a money-back guarantee. So you have nothing to lose by trying them out. I am. Stop trudging to the store for overpriced razors. Do what I did. Join DollarShaveClub.com/trunk. That's DollarShaveClub.com/trunk. That's the way to do it. Make sure you include /trunk when you go in there and order your razors. DollarShaveClub.com/trunk. Great stuff. Save money. No hassle whatsoever. DollarShaveClub.com/trunk is where to go.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho, and if you want to rock, then you got to rock with me on Talk is Jericho. I've got your rock and roll needs covered with some of the biggest guests in rock history, like Ace Frehley, Rob Zombie, Steel Panther, Rob Halford, M. Shadows, Scott Ian, Charlie Benanti, Dave Mustaine, Matthias Yabs, and of course my boys in Fozzy. Get your rock on right now with Talk is Jericho. Download it now at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
True Car is changing car buying forever. True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Just in the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the True Car Certified Dealer Network, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your savings certificate and take it to the True Car Certified Dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
It's the Eddie Trunk Podcast. This week's guest, Chris Jericho and Scott Ian. And now the entrance for Scott Ian from Anthrax. Good to see you, man.
Hey, good to see you.
Just had a signing. Your book's not out till tomorrow. How are you signing already? What are you doing?
I guess they break the rules. I don't know how it works. I don't know from books yet. It's all new to me.
I don't know from these books.
You and Jericho both have books coming out tomorrow.
On the same day.
On the same day. You're following each other's
We've been following each other
path.
For the last couple of years, though. We did shows together. We did speaking words shows
talking
together.
Talking shows.
Now books together.
Yep.
I actually have some Anthrax stories in my book. Do you have Chris Jericho stories in yours?
I don't have a Chris Jericho story in my book. I'll be book two.
Yes. I just started to realize something, that all three of us have books. Scott has one book. I have two books. You have three books now.
Yeah.
All three of us go and do stuff in clubs or speaking things.
Wow.
I feel a tour.
Wow.
I feel it.
I feel
I
a tour.
Me too.
A three-headed monster because right here.
Scott has done the speaking word shows in the States, too. We just did ours in Australia, but you did in the States.
But
as well.
We all go out. We do 30 minutes each. Then we all go and sit and sign our books. And
30
we...
minutes. I can't even finish a story in 30 minutes.
He doesn't get started.
Well, who you're talking to, I can't either. But, I mean, I'm saying we'd have to do that for the sake of making it work for all of us.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a 4-hour show.
Well, you could do longer. We could do an hour each.
So then it's a 3-hour show of just the three of us yapping.
That's good.
But you know what's funny?
I do a 3-hour show myself.
I can too, but I'm just thinking of the audience.
When we did ours together, he did an hour, I did an hour, then we came out and told the Axl Rose on Eddie Trunk story together.
That's right.
He was here too. Remember, we were all
That's
here.
That's an hour alone.
He's coming tonight.
Wait a minute.
Is Sebastian coming too?
No.
Okay. But wait,
maybe that's, if we do this, maybe that's our big encore. The three of us come out and tell the Axl Rose story at the end.
Shh, don't give it away.
That'll be like our Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah. It's perfect.
We get a bus. We go crazy.
They said we needed an anthem, so we told the Axl Rose story.
Yeah, exactly.
In your best Gene Simmons voice.
Yeah. Somebody put a hold on Madison Square Garden now for February.
Outside in the front. The
Ian Jericho Trunk Tour is coming.
That's it.
So listen, in all honesty, I was telling Chris this too. There's so many books out right now. I did a whole thing with Joe Perry last week. I did his launch, and I had him here, and then I did a thing with him at his launch, and all. So I've just made it through his book in time to do his thing,
right?
And now, because books, you need time to read them. It's not like a record you can put in and drive around and listen to it. So I haven't read a word of Jericho's new book because I got it 5 minutes ago.
Oh well,
yours.
Why don't we just stop and read it now?
Yeah, do it.
You want to read from it?
Read it out loud.
You want spoken word shows? I'll tell you. I'll still do one. I'll find
your book I have, and I did get the advance and everything of,
right.
And because I had to get Joe's thing done because I was actually doing something for him, he had me do his thing, I just started reading on a plane yesterday, and I'm about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 chapters into it, but that's where I've stopped.
Right.
But I went through your childhood stuff, I went through, you're just meeting the Metallica guys.
Thanks.
You're actually just at the point where I started to know you.
Okay.
You know, of course, Fistful of Metal, that period of time. And now I'm kind of actually, well, I know everything that happens from here because I've known you so long.
Well, maybe.
But no, I don't think so. I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, I was really enjoying what I was reading, and I think that it's going to be great when I finish it. I love the first 3 or 4 chapters, that's for sure.
Oh, cool. Good.
So it comes out tomorrow.
Yes.
And how has the reaction been so far?
I did about 25 interviews today and so far, and everyone seems to be digging it. One of the things I seem to be getting the most is people like the fact that it's not another Motley Crue type book, because that's like everybody's book in a band. I haven't read a lot of rock books. I've read like Peter's and Ace's and Gene's first book and Sammy's. Like, I haven't read that many. You know, but a lot of people are telling me they're so relieved, and it's like refreshing to hear like a different story. So it makes me happy.
And you had Kirk Hammett do your foreword.
Yes.
Which was really a really nice man. Did he say some great stuff? It was really cool of him to.
Oh, yeah.
I had to pay him to say that. Or, no, just kidding.
You know, Kirk, for me, it was like he was my choice, like really my only choice, because we've known each other since before anything happened. Like, we were both just kids. And he's known me all these years because we have a friendship outside of band friends, you know, like, hey, what's up? Like, we're actual friends. So, like, he knows me. So I figured he would be the perfect person to write it. And, yeah, he pretty much nails it. He did a great job.
Yeah, he does. And Scott's book comes out tomorrow. I mean, I really can't wait. I can't wait to get into it because there's so much stuff that I want to see how you addressed and wrote about, because I have known you from just about that period forward. And, you know, reading about your stuff, about your love and obsession with Kiss.
Right.
I mean, it's total parallel course with me, and I'm sure with Chris as well. But
I'm 80s Kiss. Scott hates me for that.
You're a whole different thing. But
I'm younger than you guys.
My bond to you guys in my earliest years was Kiss.
Right.
Because I knew you, I think, even before I started working for Megaforce, and even just around the before Fistful, because I'd come into the city like you'd come into the city and see Kiss. And we would see each other. Tom Brown, our mutual friend, who you mentioned in the book. I remember that's a story where Tommy brings in somebody.
Charlie.
Tommy brings in Charlie. Greg D'Angelo left.
We got Charlie because of Tom Brown. He knew Charlie.
So I'm reading about Tom Brown in the book and thinking of all that and just remembering like at signings and shows and stuff at the Palladium, you know, hanging out with you guys.
Right,
and
sure.
It just totally took me back to that period. And the other thing I didn't know until I read your book is your first Kiss concert was the same as my first concert ever, except for you went the first night and I went the last night.
Okay.
Because you say December 14th,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, first night.
And my went the 16th.
Right.
77.
What tour was that?
77. Okay. Which was Alive 2, because they did it for Love Gun earlier in 77, right?
Yeah.
So we saw Alive 2.
Right, but do I not say in the book? Because I'm pretty sure I saw Kiss earlier that year at Nassau Coliseum, but maybe I don't talk about that because it was the Garden show that really was. That was my first show without. My uncle took me to see the Coliseum show, but the Garden is the first time I just got to go with my friends and no supervision.
The mm-hmm. one at the Coliseum you talk about is something when you threw all the flyers or something?
No, what that's was a place that? Called the North Stage Theater. With Iron Maiden.
Oh, it was Maiden.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
threw all the Anthrax flyers up. And
yeah.
Bruce Dickinson held one up.
Yeah, Bruce in between songs like picks one up off the floor. And apparently there's some band called Anthrax playing here next week or something. So that's what all this garbage on the stage is.
But how much recollection do you have of that show in 77 being your first?
I mean,
do you have any memories?
I remember the spectacle of it. You know what I remember? I remember it being so loud. I had seats on the floor, probably by halfway back on the floor. And I remember it being so loud that it took me like 5 minutes to even understand what they were playing.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that because, again, 77, you and I are the same age.
Right.
So I was 13. So it's my first ever concert. My recollection of it was a couple things. First of all, what is that smell in the air?
Right.
Because I had no knowledge
of
what
that was because I already smoked weed.
Okay, so I didn't know what that was. I remember walking in to the Garden and people on the street selling the bootleg T-shirts,
right.
pulling them out of the bag, flipping them around. And back then, there was guys with these big cardboard flaps that sold buttons that they made,
mm-hmm.
if you remember.
Sure.
They would take magazines and Xerox
yeah.
and
yeah.
laminate the button.
There was a button-making machine
yeah.
that you could have.
Huge deal to buy the buttons in front of the Garden. And it's like, oh, which one you got? Yeah, I'll take that. I remember the banners draped around the concourse of the Garden. Each level had banners. Like back then, bringing a banner to a Kiss show was a big deal.
Right.
People would make banners mm-hmm. They were Ace, Peter, Paul or Gene guy, whatever it was, or just the logo. Of course, the back of Alive is the guy with the banner.
Right, yeah.
I mean, everybody did banners back then. But Scott, dead on, the thing that blew me away most as at my first ever concert, the spectacle, but I was way up high. I was in what they call Blue Heaven at
right.
the old Garden.
Sure.
The top seats,
yeah,
the
yeah.
blue section. And I could not, for the life of me, grasp the concept of amplification. I couldn't understand how what I was seeing as little ants, because mm-hmm. I was so high up, how that their guitars could be made to sound that loud and still be that far away and still sound that loud to
right.
me.
Right, right.
I mean, I couldn't understand it. And the first taste I got of it wasn't Kiss, but the band that opened, Piper.
So yeah, Piper.
Featuring Billy Squire.
Which I love to this day.
The night I went, was it Piper or the Rockettes?
No, the Rockettes opened for them in 80 at the Palladium.
Oh, that's right. So it was, no, I saw Detective, I think.
Wow.
Open. The night we
you
went,
didn't have the same opener all three nights
no,
at the Garden?
I'm pretty sure Detective with Michael DeBar opened the night. And they were good. Detective was good. Like, they went over.
Nikki
was,
Sixx loves Detective.
Yeah,
that record just got reissued, actually. Rock Candy, Derek Oliver.
I remember it like it went over well. Like, they did good.
Well, Piper was Billy Squire's first band.
Right.
Three guitars. I
wow.
still love those two records to this day. Technically, that was the first band I saw, and they definitely opened on the 16th.
Right.
I thought they did all three, but I could be wrong. And because then in 79, New England opened,
mm-hmm.
which was my second show.
I saw Priest open for them.
On 79?
Yeah, Nassau Coliseum, I think. Was it 79 or 80? I don't remember.
It would have had to be 79.
Was 79.
Because
I saw Priest with Kiss.
80 was the only, they only did one show in America in 80, the first show with Eric Carr at the Palladium.
Right.
And that's the one the Rock Cats opened.
Okay, yeah.
And the guy comes out
ridiculous.
With the stand up bass and got booed off the stage.
Yeah.
You were at that too?
I was at that show,
See, it's crazy, man, when you think about it.
Like, it's hard for me to remember. Like, do I really remember Gene spitting blood, or I just
think
know?
You do,
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I wasn't that far back, but still, I was a short little kid. I just remember jumping up and down a whole bunch and singing as loud as I could to all the songs and. You know, just thinking it was the raddest thing ever to be with 18,000 people, you know, all there for the same reason, you know. But I remember walking out of there saying, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to be in a band. That's it.
Yep.
That's what I have to do that.
You know what's cool, just as a quick segue, and I actually wrote about this in this book, is that...
Yeah, let's not forget Jericho's book.
No,
we're getting to you.
It's relevant.
We're getting
it's
to
relevant,
you.
Though. That's an actual story Scott will appreciate. I saw you guys open for Kiss on the Crazy Nights tour.
Right.
And I knew how big of a Kiss fan you were and thinking, like, this is so cool. Anthrax is opening for Kiss. This is great. We got the first time we got to open for you guys, you weren't there because you were home with your son being born.
Right.
It was in Luzern, Switzerland. But I'll never forget that feeling of looking at the poster and seeing Anthrax and Fozzy underneath
cool.
it. It was kind of like, wow, like you guys got to open for Kiss and then we got to open for you. It's just a really cool.
Didn't White Lion open for Kiss on the Crazy Nights tour?
Not when I saw him in Winnipeg.
I don't know what. I mean,
how
we
many
did
shows
six,
did you do?
We did like 6 weeks with him.
White Lion definitely did some because they flew me out to go out with them.
Maybe
because,
a different leg.
Yeah, would have had to been, yeah.
Featuring Greg D'Angelo, the original
drummer.
Who was
in Anthrax, which, you know, you guys, I've read a portion of the book, but you guys fought to keep Greg in and Johnny Z didn't want him or something like that.
Johnny thought he was a shitty drummer. And also, we did have an issue because we were trying to get him to start playing double bass, you know, like Motorhead-esque sound double bass, and it just wasn't happening. So we were having that problem with him as well. But then he left to join Cities, so our problem was solved, and we got Charlie.
Has there been, and we're going to go to Jericho's book in a second here, has there been any, people who've read the book that, you know, you've gotten feedback from who are in it one way or the other? Saying pro or con?
People are surprised how honest I am about myself in the book. Like, just, you know, warts and all kind of about stuff. So, like, you know, you didn't have to be so honest. I'm like, then what would be the point of writing the book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like if I can't point the finger at myself, then it's, you know, I didn't want to just write a book of a bunch of anecdotes, like 8 crazy stories or something, you know, like... that's kind of like what my live talking show is. You know, this I really wanted it to have a narrative and with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And just be able to really look back and say, I point out I was a dick, you know, in some instances.
Well, you have to. I mean, that's the only way you can take it real.
It's
make
what
it
makes
real.
It honest. And something, too, that I learned through writing books is that you don't want to use a book as a vendetta. Like, this guy was a dick and fuck him.
No.
But you can always cut yourself down and make fun of yourself and take the piss out of yourself because it makes you more accessible, makes it real.
Sure.
And plus, you'll never sue yourself.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's the only time the publisher's lawyers, like, they had no problem with anything I said about myself.
Yeah, right, exactly. Isn't that funny that you do the draft where you do a couple drafts, then you got to do the proofreading draft, then the legal draft.
Yeah, the legal draft.
Then they come in with, like you can't say this about
something. Well, how does that
Maybe
work,
you
actually?
Change this person's name.
Yeah.
How does that work, actually, in terms of that legality? I never understood that, because my books are not autobiographies, and my books are more just celebrating the bands that were important, I thought.
Right.
But even so, like, there's been a couple things in my book where my publisher would say, no, you got to change that for that reason. I never quite understood that line. When you write an autobiography, and if you're going to dig into somebody, where's the line? How do you do it without getting?
They tell you,
yeah, they tell you. They're
but
very specific.
As a writer, what do they tell you? You can and can't do it.
They
in
They will
way?
Actually give you, like with me, they actually gave me options. Like they would say, okay, you're saying this about this person. Our suggestions are either cut it. Or change it, or change their name. I'm like, well, I can't change the name.
Yeah.
You know, it's someone like. So they're like, okay, how about like this, or like this, or like this, and they'll actually give you a whole bunch of options where you're kind of saying the same thing, but you're changing the you're making it, I guess, where it's not libelous anymore. Because what it comes down to is whether or not something's actually the truth. Like I could write something, and this is the absolute truth. And then someone could turn around, someone's lawyer could turn around and say to you, well, that's your perception of
exactly.
the truth.
I had that where someone was wearing gloves all the time and they didn't like germs. They're a germaphobe. And I said, so-and-so was a germaphobe. They said, you can't say that.
Right.
I said, why? Well, because they might not be. Well, it's not really a cut down. I'm not saying they're a fucking asshole germaphobe, but no, you can't say that. So I had to take that out. Just little things like that. Someone could see that and want to sue you for it.
Yeah. You could say you were hanging out with someone and you drank or you did drugs,
yes,
or you did this, and they'll say like, well, you really can't say that about that person. I'm like, yeah, but it happened. They're like, well, but you can't say it because that person might not want that out
that
for the public, or especially if it's someone who's not famous. Because if it's someone who's not, let's say, in the public eye, then they have an expectation of privacy that you can't just like put that out there without their permission, you know?
But what if you say, like, you being in the music business and, like, you know, we signed with this manager and he was a total dick and ripped us off. Can you say that?
Sure, you could say it, but you could also get sued.
Yeah.
So how – I mean, it almost sounds so limiting that to be able to be so transparent then. How do you do it?
You have to be very careful. Like, okay, can we say he had some questionable business practices that we felt it was best to go our separate
ways?
Exactly.
You have to say
something
it
like that. Like, in my opinion, this guy was a fucking asshole who ripped us off. This is what I think. I can't prove it, but I feel this way. That sort of thing.
I see. Yeah. I see. Because I just, like I said, I just finished Joe Perry's book, and he talks about, you know, managers that started out great and turned them wrong, and was pitting the band against each other, and this and that. I mean. And I'm trying to think about how it was worded, but obviously his book is a major book with Simon Schuster. He's had to have it cleaned up.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they had lawyers, comb through that and go through it with him, I'm sure. And it's also up to you. You could also say, I don't give a shit, and go ahead. I don't care. I'm saying what I'm saying, and go ahead, sue me. You know, trust me, if I had...
Sue everybody.
Sue everybody. If I had Joe
Rosenberg.
Hey, if I had Joe Perry's money, I would probably say, you know what, fuck him. Go ahead, sue me.
But check
go
this
ahead, try and win.
But here's the thing that could even be worse. I wrote a chapter about Dancing with the Stars when I did that. And after I handed it in, the legal came back and said, are you sure you can write about this?
Right.
I said, what do you mean? He said, I need to see the contract. He goes to the contract and says, you're not allowed to write about this or... It's my life, my story.
Yeah.
So I had to go send that to the BBC, who owns Dancing with the Stars, and they had to approve.
The BBC's responsible for that nonsense?
Yes, to whether or not they were allowed to be used. Hey, Geezer Butler voted for me when I was in Dancing with the Stars, so nothing.
Wait a minute,
that.
The one in the U.S. was seen in England, or?
No, it's owned by the BBC. They created it.
Oh, so when you were on it in America, Geezer voted for you?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
He told me when I hosted the Golden Gods. I was watching them Dancing with the Stars.
So many things wrong with that on so
I
many levels.
Voted for it. I was like, anybody that thinks that was gay, they can suck it because Geezer Butler voted for me.
No, it just shows Geezer watches it, so it can't be gay.
So that's what I'm saying. But the point is, I had to send it to the BBC, and the thing was, Scott, here's the thing. I said, well, I'm just going to put it in there anyways. I don't care. And they said, okay, fine. They might be able to pull all the books off the shelves. That's where you get hurt.
Yeah, of course.
So then I was going to just take a marker, a Sharpie, and just cover, like, just cross out all of the Dancing with the Stars stuff, but still publish it. Like,
right.
I did this show about dancing with some stars,
but
I'm not allowed to talk about it. So finally, after months and months and months, they sent it back, and the only change they wanted was, I said, the first dance I did was the cha-cha-cha to Should I Stay or Should I Go? And I'm sure Joe Strummer was rolling in his grave knowing that his song was on Dancing with the fucking Stars. And they said, hey, can you change that from fucking to effing?
That was it.
After 3 months.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But still, it's like, that's the process you have to go through, or else they can pull it off the shelves and then you're really screwed.
All right. So let's now turn the spotlight to the 2-time best-selling author, now with his third book.
Thank you. Actually,
Mr. Jericho.
I wanted to pull up this one little paragraph here.
You going to read from your book?
Just
for
one
us?
Paragraph. You'll appreciate this. When we did the thing with Anthrax, when you weren't there, Andreas was there. I went on the bus, your bus, the Anthrax bus, to hang out with Charlie and Andreas.
This is in your book.
This is in my book. Okay. And we were in Switzerland driving to Germany. While we were on the bus talking on the Anthrax bus, we started talking about Cliff Burton. And the bus accident. While we were talking about the bus
accident,
our Fozzy bus got in a bus accident. for real at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
Nobody got hurt, but all the gear was trash. Everything was trash. But this is a story. Me and Charlie were talking about Cliff, and I asked him, like, what's your favorite Cliff story? And he said, Charlie's favorite Burton story came from when he was watching Metallica set from the side of the stage, like I had watched Anthrax's in Lucerne. Every night before the guitar solo in Master of Puppets, Hetfield always yelled something into the mic, but Charlie could never figure out what it was. It's fix me. You know, fix him, eh? He asked Cliff what it was. Cliff said, it's pancakes.
That's right.
I guarantee next time you listen to Master of Puppets, you'll hear, think James says pancakes. It's all I ever hear at this point. So that's a true story, right?
Absolutely true. He told us totally straight-faced, pancakes. That's what he says, pancakes. And then, you know, Cliff was just like a consummate ball buster like that, too.
Yeah.
So it was kind of sometimes you didn't know if he was serious or not because he would just be totally just like, it's pancakes. Like, that's
and
it.
Straight-faced.
Like, just super dry, straight-faced, smoke a cigarette, walk away.
Yeah. I remember in Scott's book, too, from what I read of it, too, being that, again, our history is so parallel in so many ways in terms of being kids. And talking about Johnny Z, who I later went on to work with,
who originally signed Fozzy, too.
Yeah, but reading about your just early dealings with him and just knowing him like I did, just I laughed and Rock and Roll Heaven, the flea market.
Sure.
I mean, we all hung out there. I mean, when you write about that period in your book, it put me back there in that flea market, you know, and you'd look and he'd have like clothespins with like picture discs of Anvil hanging up and stuff. And
that's actually what Charlie was telling me because Charlie read the book and he said, man, it just took me back to so many things, like stuff he hadn't thought about in a long time.
Yeah. What did he think? Like, you know, I remember things a certain way. You remember things a certain way. Did Charlie go and go, that's not how it went? Or
no, he didn't say anything like that. You know, he just said it really just put him back in a time and a place.
That's
he
cool.
said he said he really enjoyed it. So
yeah,
that's what the great books do, and that's what I said about Joe's book. Even though I didn't grow up knowing Joe Perry like Scott, Joe Perry's book, the way it's written, I said this to him. I said when you're a little kid in the woods in Vermont or whatever, I feel like I was there. When you're on drugs, I felt like I was on drugs.
Cool.
When you're in the Joe Perry project, I felt like I was struggling. The way it's written, he's got this. He had this guy write with him who's you know, this guy David Ritz, who's a really accomplished writer, and he really did a great job of capturing that. You worked with John Wiederhorn, right?
Yes. Yep.
So how did that process go? Did John sit and write with you? Did you dictate to him? How do you do that?
I had done like a lot of the stories, like let's say like the Lemmy story or off the top of my head, I can't think of other stuff right now, but I had already like written out a lot of this stuff because of my talking show. Like I had like written like almost in chapter form, but just for me to have it, like I'd write out the whole story, everything I could remember. And then from that, I would kind of take it and transpose it into a way to like tell it live. And so I had kind of already done a lot of that stuff. So I just sent John all these stories that I had already like, you know, typed out. And so he had that stuff as well as, and he came to my house in LA and spent a week and we just, every night we'd eat food and drink and he would just turn the recorder on and I would talk for, you know, 5-6 hours straight every night. And just that would just, you know, tangents. And then we would get into something and he would ask me questions about it and then tangents and on and on and on until, you know, he had, I don't know, 80 hours of conversation or something at some point. And then, you know, we just discussed how the book would roll out. Like, you know, definitely wanted it to have a narrative. You know, that was really important to me. I didn't want it to just be stories. I wanted it to flow from start to finish. And John was really good at making that happen. You know, just it was pretty collaborative, you know, I'd have to say. He did a lot of work, you know, especially all the old stuff, like my childhood and all that kind of stuff. He actually interviewed my mom and interviewed my dad. So, but it sounds like it's coming from my point of view. You know, just to fill in some holes. I learned stuff like in that book, in my book, my dad told a story about how he had to stop my mom from trying to jump out of the moving car. I learned that like last year. I never even knew that. You know, it's crazy for me to learn that. I just learned from my dad like 3 weeks ago that Ian, which was my middle name, it was from Ian Fleming, the guy who wrote James Bond.
Really?
One of the James Bond books. Yeah, yeah. I just found this out 3 weeks
That's
ago.
That's your last name for 30 years.
Yeah, I'm like, how did I just find this out? Like, I could have had this cool story to tell all these years. And he goes, yeah, and your little brother Sean is from Sean Connery. I'm like, You just telling me this now. Like, I was named after Ian Fleming.
So
like,
your dad was a
this.
Big Bond fan,
yes.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did your parents get pissed? Your dad get pissed that because you legally changed your last name to Ian?
Yes.
Do they get pissed that you dropped Rosenfeld?
No, he actually said to me, I'm surprised it took you this long to do it. Like, no one got pissed.
The family name, man. You knocked out the family name.
But, you know, working with Wiederhorn, he really... I knew it would work well with us when he had asked me a couple of years ago to write the foreword to his book, Louder Than Hell. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And then at some point, I don't know how much time had passed, he sends me this foreword to read. And I'm like, this is really good. When did I write this?
Oh, he cleaned it up.
And he said, you didn't. I actually just took a bunch of interviews we've done over the years, and I put it together. And I'm like, dude... Not only did you like capture my voice, but you captured the way I write. Like, it's the way I would have written it. And I said, do you want to work on a book together? Because he really, really understood my voice. And especially when, I had already been doing talking shows. So when we would sit and do interviews, I'm telling stories the way I tell them in my show. So, you know, it makes it a little easier to capture my voice, obviously, when I'm just telling a story the way I would tell it.
Let me say something about John Wiederhorn, who is a writer, for you guys that don't know, who worked on Scott's book. And as Scott said, did this book, with Catherine Turman, this amazing book about metal called Louder Than Hell. If John Wiederhorn was able to co-author a book with Al Jorgensen,
he
can do anything.
Exactly.
Because there's a book that came out about a year and a half ago about Al Jorgensen and ministry that is unbelievable if you get a chance to read it. And even if you're not a huge fan of that music, I'm not. I mean, I respect and like Al, but that's musically, it's not my thing. But I enjoyed the hell out of that book.
Oh, it's great.
And we were going to have Al on that metal show to promote it, and he canceled because you're reading about Al being a mess throughout that book, and unfortunately, he was supposed to come on, and he had to go back into rehab.
Right.
So he canceled on our show. But what a book that is, and I can't even imagine. Wiederhorn could probably do a book about doing the ministry book.
Yeah, Heart of Darkness.
Easily. Easily. Now, Chris... Your third book, tell everybody about this. Take some time and give everybody
It's funny because, first of all, I had Zach did my forward, Zach Wild, and you're talking about writing styles. And he writes, if you ever get text from him, the capitals and there's no punctuation and it's just like all this crazy stuff. And the editor of the book said, you can't put this in there as a forward. And I was like, you have to.
It's Father Jericho.
Father Jericho. You know, this is, book is better. Everything will feel good, even if your prostate doctor's hands are the size of Andre the Giant's. You know, giant is capital, and S on hands is capital. But, you know, so you got, that's what you asked for, and that's what you get. But basically for me, much like Scott, I wrote my first book about my earlier years, and that takes some time to go back and really delve up the memories. And then that book did really well, so they asked me to do another one, which took me up to about 2007. And then that book did really well, and then they asked me to do another one. I'm like, do I really need three autobiographies by the time I'm in my early 40s? Like, Ernest Hemingway has one. But then I started writing about it, and because of all the stuff that I do with WWE and all the Fozzy stuff and, you know, the Dancing the Stars and going to Iraq three times, and when we were there we got stranded in an unsecured war zone with insurgents and Taliban, and it ended up being a really, really cool, another third chapter. So it's like a trilogy. It's the Return of the Jedi of my books. So, it picks up. It's like listening to 2112. If you read the first one, it all relates to the second one, which relates to the third one. So it's kind of a trilogy.
So, I mean, and that's one thing that would strike me about both of you guys is the exact fact of, you're both too young to be doing autobiographies on first thought. But especially I thought that with Scott, even though he's older than you, because he's my age, but because I still feel like we're young. Well, but then you take a step away from it, you're like, wait a minute, you got 30 years of shit to talk about.
There's so much to talk about.
Or 50 years if you count your whole life.
Yeah.
So much to talk about. And people love that stuff because they don't know. They weren't there. And when you can really capture, like you're talking about the early years of Anthrax, that's the early years of thrash metal. That's a whole scene that was just starting and you were right in the thick of it. There's so much to write about. I mean, that's the thing about it. It's not, you know, you can write another autobiography in 5 years if you want, or 2 years or whatever. if you had to.
There's a lot. I've already got like four chapters for another
See,
book.
See, that's the thing.
Well, I want to do – everybody keeps asking me what my third book is going to be because I'm still doing signings. That's the one great thing about books. They live forever.
Right.
I was just in Louisiana this weekend. My second book's a year old. My first book's 3 years old. And I'm still selling both of them like they just came out when I do signings.
Right.
And I'm still doing signings, and people are still just discovering it, which is great.
Yes.
But my books are totally different than what you guys do because they're half photos, half text, and just basically why I love these bands and my stories with them. Mm-hmm. One story with them. I could have 100 with everyone, but just one story. It's a great – you know what I call my books? Great toilet bowl books.
Right.
Because you can sit there and you can read a chapter on a band in 5 minutes, and it's an easy read. I do want to do the book one day. I want to do an autobiography one day, mm-hmm, about my experiences in the world I've been in, TV and radio and the record companies and all the stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, you won't be able to write about any of it.
Well, that's exactly what I'm worried about. I'm worried about two things. I'm worried about the legality of it because it's not going to be any good unless I can put it out there the way I want.
Of course.
And honestly, I still very much need to work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I'm going to tell some stories about some things that I may even be doing now that I'm kind of getting dicked around with.
But, right. But there's a way to do it. Like I said, you don't write it as a vendetta. You tell
I'm
the
not
stories
saying a
that
vendetta,
people want to hear.
But it's got to be real. Sure. Otherwise, I don't want to waste my time.
But, yeah. But you also, like you said, you still have to work and still have to have friends in the business, you know?
Yeah, I'm not trying to kill anybody, but I need to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I want to still be friends with you after the book comes out, Chris.
I never did anything bad. I just got drunk on your show a few times and took you to a go-go dancing club on your 40th birthday.
10 years ago already. That was great. Jericho, I turned 40 with Chris at, what was it called again?
Lookers
in Elizabeth, New Jersey. New Jersey.
Wow.
Hey, Scott, I'm going to show you this picture.
Elizabeth,
if you remember
New
this
Jersey.
Night. Look at this shot. You remember that night?
Yeah, I have a...
It's radio, guys. Tell them what you're looking at.
It's a picture of Lars and Steve Harris.
It's a picture of Lars
Chris
and Steve talking. I went behind
backstage
them.
Backstage at the Forum.
I went and stood behind them because I wanted to take the picture. They had no idea I was standing there.
It was when Maiden played the Forum.
The Somewhere Back in Time tour when they just had one show.
Yeah, they did the one show. It was part of, actually, they were filming Flight 666
That's right.
at the time. And they did a one-off at the Forum on their way to South America. And... so, like, lots of people were
Everybody
there.
Everybody was there. Dio was there. You were there, Carrie. It's like three of, like, the thrash metal guys who invented it. Lars, you, and Carrie were all hanging around. Steve
we were
was
at
there.
The sound. I was watching from the soundboard, and Lars was right next to me singing every word to, like, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner as loud as he could right in my ear. Like, just like, thanks, Lars, but I really like to hear Bruce sing it.
He was so mad, too. He's like, look at Steve Harris. He's got so much fucking hair. It drives me crazy. He's 10 years older. He's got all his hair still.
I was a good – they were in town for, like, 3-4 days. Smallwood had a birthday party.
Yeah.
At that pub, the English pub in Santa Monica, was like the King's Head, or I can't remember the name of it. But
just everybody was
and
there.
And they all showed up. Like, the band was there. Got to hang out. I, like, was hanging out with Dave Murray in his hotel room. Like, it was like an epic week.
Another thing in your
we're
book, Scott.
Kids.
That's another thing in your book, though, Scott, is we talked earlier about the, you know, our mutual kiss thing. But you, the one thing for you that you talk about a lot is that the whole blueprint for Anthrax was Maiden.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything was Maiden, Motorhead Maiden,
too,
Maiden.
But a lot of Maiden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, we were so... I remember, I don't think the picture's in my book. It was one of the ones I picked, but I don't know if it's in there. When we were recording Fistful of Metal, we had, like, Peace of Mind. We just had that album sitting in the studio, like in the window at Pyramid. Mm-hmm. Like, I had that and our Soldiers of Metal 7-inch sitting there, like, for inspiration to look at while I was recording.
Well, because the first Anthrax record was a lot different from Spreading the Disease. It was more kind of like the difference between Killers and Number of the Beast or something like that. It was much more straightforward metal.
Yeah.
Like metal,
absolutely.
Thrashing mad. Almost the Priest influence, too, I think.
Yep.
That must have been in there as well. Yep.
I didn't like the first record nearly as much as what came after it. Just, I mean, I remember Johnny Z and I, who, again, if you read Scott's book, is a huge factor in Anthrax's history and mine as well when I worked in the industry back then. But I remember Johnny, I remember listening to him like, yeah, it's okay. And then I remember when the EP came with Armed and Dangerous, because mm-hmm. he knew what I was into,
right?
Because I would shop at his store. And he, you know, I was doing a metal show back then even, and he would say, by the way, check this one out. There's a new singer. You're going to love this. And then I heard Armed and Dangerous from the EP. I was like, whoa, this is awesome. And then that and spreading was really where I totally got into the band.
Yeah, oh, no, we grew leaps and bounds as writers, you know, at that point.
And the singing, too.
Yeah. I mean, Joey's voice elevated us. And then, and also Charlie, you know, joining the band and then starting to write, you know, the material, it just changed. You know, it really just it took us to a different level.
He didn't write anything on Fistful. He wasn't in the band at the time.
No, most of that, a lot of that stuff was kind of pre-ish Charlie, and then some of it. I mean, Lilka wrote most of Fistful.
Oh, really?
A lot of that is Danny, some of me, and maybe there's a little bit of Charlie in there. Soldiers of Metal, maybe. I don't remember truthfully. Yeah, we actually, I think if you look on the songs, it says who wrote what on that record. But certainly on Spreading, Charlie really, like, you know, that's when he really kind of came into, you know, his own, saying like, hey, check, I've got riffs, you know, and they were great.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, there's obviously so many eras and things that go on in the history of Anthrax. I'm talking about the real early stuff because it's the only part, it's where I'm at in the book. Of course, I know the history, but I can't wait to read it in the book and learn more, and I'm probably going to want to talk to you all over again once I get through
all
the other stuff.
I'm excited to read about the Public Enemy collaboration. I mean, because once again, I think Anthrax kind of gets lost a little bit in basically creating, along with Run DMC and Aerosmith, but creating like rap rock in a
lot of
ways.
And I blame them all for it. I haven't forgiven any of them to this day.
but that was so revolutionary at the time, man.
I always say, though, I mean, yeah, look, we opened the door for ourselves. We did I'm the Man in 86, and then that opened the door for us to be able to do Bring the Noise. Mm-hmm. But the reason we even did I'm the Man was because Rick Rubin sampled guitars on like LL Cool J records and Run DMC records and Beastie Boys stuff. Like, that's where I got it from, you know, straight up. Like, for me, without Rick Rubin, we probably never even do I'm the Man. So, you know, I look at it as it's you could blame him, Ed.
Blame.
You know, if you want to blame. But,
man.
Yeah, no,
it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. But also Faith No More. As far back as 86 with like We Care A Lot and stuff like that, they were also, you know, dabbling in
that.
But
you kind of took it to the mainstream, at least for kids like me. I'd never heard that before when we were big Anthrax fans. And
no,
that comes this is cool.
The point we did it, we were pretty much at our commercial peak at that time when we did Bring the Noise. So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty big deal.
When you, I'm the Man, I think, was the first gold record I ever got.
I think,
because it was your first gold record, right?
The I'm the Man
EP
was.
Yeah. Before
Among the Living?
Yeah, that went gold before Among the Gold.
Because I was, again, I worked, for people who don't know, I worked for Anthrax's management label back then, and I remember it was a big deal because those boxes came into the office, and it was like, wow, you know, the company finally had a gold record.
That was Island Records?
Yeah, okay. Megaforce Islands, you know, and it was a big deal. We all put those records on our wall. It's funny, if you want a little fun fact about the I Am the Man album cover. Because Frank Bello and I have been busting each other's balls. All of us in Anthrax have busted each other's balls for decades. But Frankie is such a ball buster that if you look at the cover, it's the band standing in front of a, you know, graffiti wall with stuff painted on it. If you look right behind Frank's head, you will see like SSY. UNK coming out of his head, and you can't see what the rest of it is because his head's in the way. It says "Kiss My Ass, Ed Trunk." And if you look at alternate photos from that session where if you look at it like everybody's moved an inch or two the other way, like an author, it's right there. It just so happened that his head cuts through half of it.
Right.
But it's coming right out of the side of his head.
That's great.
And by the way, along those lines, I told you, Scott, thank you. You gave me a nice mention in the front of your book. I appreciate
you're welcome.
It. Appreciate being in that company and you remembering that. So thank you. All right. So both books are out tomorrow. Scott Ian's I'm the Man.
Yes.
What is it, the story of that guy from Anthrax?
I love that. I text you that, how cool that
is. My original idea was I wanted it to be the story of that guy from that band, because that's more like, aren't you that guy from that band?
Totally.
But the publisher really were like, we really want Anthrax in the title. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I love it, that guy from Anthrax. Because you're that too, the guy from Anthrax. Yeah.
And Jericho, you have a great title for your book.
The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea.
There you go.
Yes.
Which both are out tomorrow. You both have signings, I guess, for the next couple weeks, probably.
Where's your signing tomorrow, Scott?
I'm in Ridgewood, New Jersey tomorrow.
At Bookends.
Yes, at Bookends. And then at the Strand here in the city on Wednesday. And I just have to say, we have free beer at the Strand.
Wow.
Thanks to,
no.
Thanks to our friends at Butternuts Brewery. They make
Damn.
That pork slap pale ale, which is one of my favorite beers, actually. And they've donated a whole bunch of cases for the signing.
Nice. I think your signing will do better than mine. Yeah. Can I say where mine is?
Yeah, of course.
October 4th, tomorrow, Carl Place, Barnes & Noble, that's Long Island. Ridgewood, New Jersey, Bookends on the 15th, 16th at Staten Island, New York, Barnes & Noble. And if you buy a book, I'll buy you a beer. How does that sound?
There you go.
There you go.
Give out drink tickets.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, people think I'm kidding when I say free beer. I'm actually not
He's
kidding.
Serious.
We have free beer at the signing on Wednesday at the Strand.
Funny story about Bookends in Ridgewood. Chris, you did that store, right?
Yes, a bunch of times.
You I assume, have never
done
it.
My first time.
Okay. Great store. Everybody did the signings there. I did it for my first book. I didn't do it on my second. Why, I don't know. But this is great. You know, my first book comes out. I don't know if anybody's going to give a shit when I do these book signings. Like, who's going to show up? Does
right.
anybody care? I forever have in my mind, any time to this day, that I do a public event or a signing, the Spinal Tap scene.
Of course.
It's just there. It's my greatest fear. So it's in Jersey. I live in New Jersey. It's like, okay, this is going to be a good one. It's got to be a good one. So I pull up, I call the store from my cell phone, and I was like, hey, so I'm getting close. Where do I park? And they go, oh, come around back. There's a parking lot in the back. Are you driving yourself? Yeah. Come around back. There's a little door. You'll see a number on it. That's the back entrance. Come through there. It'll bring you right in the office. I'm like, okay, cool. So I drive around back to the store. I park the car. And I walk in the back office through the back employee door. And there's an office. And the door to the office is open. And it looks out into the store. And I'm looking out, and there's fucking nobody in the store. This is like 15 minutes before the signing's supposed to start. And I'm like, oh, my God. And you know how when you do a book signing, they ask you before you sign a bunch of stock for the store so they can sell signed copies? So they're like, well, before you start the signing, you sign some stock. And I'm like, I think that's the only thing I'm going to be signing, but okay. So they take 20 books or whatever. They ask me to sign them. I'm sitting there signing the back. And then I'm looking, and I keep looking over my shoulder. I'm looking out. There's like two guys like walking around. They don't look like metal guys. I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. And I'm just delaying. Like, do you got anything else you want me to sign? Because I'm like, let it go later. You know, I'm making small talk. Yeah, I'm making small talk. I'm like, hey, you want to bring anybody back to meet me? Whatever. And the woman finally comes in and she goes, are you ready to start the signing then now? It's like 7:05. And I'm like, well, I mean, do you want me to just walk around? I see two people out there and say hello. I mean, I was so humiliated. Like, do you want me to just shake their hands and
got no timing.
Yeah, I'm like, what do you want me to do here? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I'm sorry this has happened. I'm really, and she goes, oh no, we have a downstairs. Oh my God.
At Bookends?
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
The weight of the world was off my shoulders. I'm like, what?
Wow.
You have a book? And she goes, oh yeah, come out into the store. And I stepped out of the office. I see stairs going down. And she goes, follow me. And I walk down the stairs and the place is full. And I was like, hey! I'm like, holy shit. I went from the lowest to low to the highest to high. The room's packed. People standing on the stairs.
That's
I'm
great.
Like, oh my God. So all my friends to this day, like even Joe Perry, who did, and I'm like, listen, don't be nervous if you go in the back door. There's a downstairs.
Right.
And it was my greatest Spinal Tap. That'll be in my book if I ever write it. But so don't panic. There's a downstairs. And there's a little stage. It's great. It's great. So
they do a good job.
Yeah, they do. Everybody does. You know, Jimmy Page is doing a book signing?
There.
But not at Bookends. Oh. He's doing it at Barnes & Noble where Joe did his on Tuesday.
He's doing it at Yankee Stadium.
No. Yeah, right. And he's not giving away free beer.
I read back to your book, I did read the Yankee Stadium thing.
Oh,
and
okay.
I knew about that happening, but I never knew all the intricacies of it that you write in your book.
Right.
And the fact
that's so cool.
The visual of Scott trying to wrestle with that giant mat being drunk to pull the on-deck circle up is just...
Oh, I thought you meant when you played Yankee Stadium.
That's
when you got arrested at
Yankee Stadium. No, when he tried to steal from Legends Field.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other one's in there too.
That's another thing, a huge part of my history with Scott and Anthrax is, and the ball, another thing at the core of our year of decades of ball busting is me being a Mets fan and them just destroying me forever for being a Yankee. They're Yankees fans. And the best was, just this story just came to me. You guys were playing. I'm working for the management label, and there you guys were playing at the forum. It might have been I remember what tour it was, but El Cid came.
89.
Sid Fernandez came.
I remember.
And somebody said, came and got me because I was the one Mets fan. Like, I was like, go up there, I see El Cid. I'm like, yeah, come on back. I want you to meet my friends. They're really big Met fans. Here he is at a Met guy at a Yankees or in the Yankee stronghold over there with these guys.
Sid was great though. He was super nice.
Remember we took a picture holding the guitar or something, and of course years later, our mutual friend Mike Piazza would be a huge Metal and Anthrax fan. But the greatest is you guys talk about when you played Yankee Stadium. Standing on the side watching you guys play just recently for the Big Four, and you yelled something in between songs. Mets,
I did. I did. I think I said something to the effect of about how something about I made a joke about how originally they were talking about doing this at Citi Field or something like that, but we said we wouldn't play where the losers play. Or so I remember it was some kind of joke, and I said, "Take that, Eddie Trunk."
Yeah, you said that to the crowd on the stage, Yankee Stadium, and I'm standing next to your wife Pearl, and I go, "Did he actually just say what I think he says?" She goes, "Yep." Dissing me and the Mets on stage, at Yankee
Stadium. That's when you know you've been around for a while. Yeah. They're playing Yankee Stadium. I'm still going to bull bust Eddie Trunk.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I had to on that stage. I know. How else could I not?
I couldn't believe it was great.
Hey, can I ask a question, Scott? We haven't talked about this yet, and it's kind of off topic. But what do you think about Malcolm Young? I mean, not what do you think about it. How much of a drive? I know that's why I'm asking.
That's a good point. I want to ask him that too because you're the most hardcore AC/DC fan. What do you think about them continuing without him?
Absolutely, they should continue without him. I mean,
I agree.
But it's terrible. They haven't confirmed anything. There's never been an official announcement as to what's going on. I only know what I've read. And, the Sydney Morning Herald had some article saying he was in some care facility that specializes in dementia and stuff like that. But whether or not any of that's true, I have no idea. Whatever it is, it's just really sad that, this guy doesn't get to finish it out with the band that he started. So, and me as a fan, he's my guy. I mean, Malcolm Young is my hero. So it's horrible.
I love in typical AC/DC fashion where they don't have any Twitter or any social media, no news, and they keep it in the family and get Stevie Young in the band who hasn't
It's
played.
The way it should be.
It's great. I mean, I saw him on the Blow Up Your Video Tour in 88 when
he
Malcolm
plays just like him. He looks like him. You know, it's perfect. It's the best thing they can do because who doesn't want to see AC/DC again?
That's right.
You know, I can't wait to go.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's such a drag because if you like most people won't even know that it's not Malcolm.
Right.
You're an average fan. Guys like us know that Malcolm was the machine and the engine of that band, and it's a total drag. But the fact they're continuing on and keeping in the family, I just think it's classic AC/DC.
And let's be honest. And I'm just I hate being this brutally honest, but I'm going to be. It's not going to mean one less ticket sold.
You're right.
It doesn't mean one because it's the same thing. But I mean, we're hardcore fans into this music. We care about that sort of stuff. We know and acknowledge it. To about 70% of the people that are going to fill a stadium to see AC/DC, especially in America, all they care about is to see Angus moving around out there and Brian Johnson singing the songs. Whatever else happens is whatever. It's just like everyone went crazy about Bill Ward not being in Sabbath, and I would have loved to have seen him too. But at the end of the day, there's not a person that didn't go see Sabbath that I don't know because Bill Ward wasn't there. You still end up going.
AC/DC will be bigger next summer than they've ever been. They could play 10 nights at Yankee Stadium if they wanted to.
Same with Michael Anthony and Wolfgang. Once you went and people just didn't, you don't care. You see Roth and Eddie on stage and that's
I don't know. That one was a little different to me though because Michael Anthony was a bigger personality on stage.
I don't think that the average Van Halen fan knows or cares. I think as long as you have Roth and Eddie on stage.
Well, yes, as far as tickets and draw, but the thing about the difference between the Bill Ward thing and the Malcolm Young thing is they're both guys that very much laid in the back in the live show. Bill Ward's behind the drums. Malcolm was not. He walked up front to sing backing, but he walked back.
That's their thing.
Right, right. But he wasn't
Whereas
Michael Anthony's a big part of the voice, the Jack Daniels bass, the hopping around. His whole personality, I think, was a little more missed than more obvious. Sure. That's all.
I can see your point, but I don't think it sold one less ticket.
No, right. I agree with you. I mean, there's just, you know, that's just the way it is. As long as the two or three key guys, the front man and the key other guy are there, it's not going to economically impact them all that
much.
And
one last point about DC. We played in Brighton last year and Smallwood came to our show, and afterwards I was asking, we went up to dinner, I was like, so who's a bigger band than Iron Maiden? And he said, well, you know, there's U2 and in some places Metallica and Springsteen, but he said the biggest rock band in the world by far is AC/DC.
He said
the only reason why they're not bigger is they just don't want to be. He said, I still lay awake at night and try and think, how can Iron Maiden be as big as AC/DC? You know, it's like, wow, that's Rod Smallwood still thinking, how can we do what they're doing?
Yeah.
If Freddie Mercury were still alive, Queen would be bigger.
Internationally, maybe.
For sure.
Yeah.
If he could still perform and sing, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I would think that Queen would. And of course, if Zeppelin were still together.
But, well, and if the Stones toured regularly if John Lennon was still alive, you know, Beatles, but. I mean, the DC as a heavy rock band is the biggest.
By the way, Blessed Death, if they were still around.
Where did you pull that out of?
I just tried to think of what's the most obscure name I could think of now that would never play a stadium.
Larry Portelli. Yeah. Wow. I remember him, man. Oh, my God. That's crazy.
By the way, very intense.
It's a deep New Jersey metal reference from early 80s that only Scott and I probably knew. Oh, my God. That's too funny. Thank you for saying that.
You're
it just
welcome.
Brought me back to great time.
I thought maybe that was the original name of Anthrax.
No.
It was a metal band that never really made it from Jersey. I remember they used to sit outside the parking lot of my radio show and eat calzones waiting to see if I'd play their record.
They used to open for Zyrus.
Zyrus was Zach's first
band. I know.
Band,
there you go.
Spelled with a Z.
There he is, jamming to Fight Him right now in my house. Rebel.
Nice. Is your son, is he really into metal?
Does
he like pop stuff too?
No, not at all.
Oh, it's
not
great.
At
he's,
all.
He's got the long hair,
the,
too.
The poppiest you get, like, he loves the Allman Brothers. Like, but seriously. No, because we play music 24/7 in the house, mostly not metal, but because he knows what I do and he's seen the Big Four DVD a bunch, so he loves Metallica. He walks around the house singing "Hit the Lights." Like he's 3 years old.
Cool kid.
Lars, he plays drums. Lars gave him a pair of sticks. Like, you know, he wakes up in the morning and the first thing he'll say, I'll be like, "How you feeling, Rev?" He's like, "I'm not Revel." I'm like, "Oh, who are you today?" "I'm Gene Simmons." Like, gosh. I'm like, it's like, the, as for me,
yeah,
it's just,
circle
I just,
of life.
Like, my heart just goes boom every morning. Like, it's amazing.
My kids know what I do, 31 years in hard rock and metal, and they walk around singing Katy Perry and Iggy Azalea. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Cool.
But I'm not going to force it. It'll come. I tried to take them to go see... Overkill the other day. That might have been throwing him in the deep end a little too soon. But
I took my son to see Sabbath on this last tour because we went to the Stones and he loved it. So I said, well, let's go to Sabbath. And it's when they had, if you remember, if you saw the show in the States, they had these Trons on the side of the stage that were showing these horrible, blasphemous images,
terrible things.
Let me say this. There's nothing like watching two naked nuns making out, jerking off a cross covered in blood with your 9-year-old son. Let me tell you that. I had to do the walk of shame out of that concert and everyone's looking at me, bad parent. I know.
And just why don't you just now show them the Walking Dead premiere from yesterday too, and put it out. Did you watch that show?
Oh yeah.
Did you see the first show?
Horrible. I mean, horrible.
Did you watch it?
I have it on iTunes. I haven't seen it yet.
Dude, opening scene was fucked up, man.
Oh my God! I between that and Sons of Anarchy. The rules, any censorship that ever existed on TV is gone.
Good. Finally.
American Horror Story.
Gone. But what that scene in Sons in Walking Dead, I won't give it away for those people who saw it, was beyond
sick.
Sicker than anything that I've seen in a horror movie.
You can feel it, too. You read the comics.
That's
so
my
might
buddy,
be
Greg Nicotero.
He did a great job
God,
in this one.
Direct was that over
effects.
The top
he's,
insane.
He's the man. He's
but
really,
for that
really
to
cool.
have been on regular TV...
Well, it's on cable.
It's AMC.
Still,
it's
still,
not.
Cable, yeah.
Still, I mean, I know legally there's no... Legally, you can do anything you want on cable. That's what a lot of people don't realize is that legally you can.
Right.
But nobody ever did Legally, you can, I think, after 10, but nobody ever did because they never wanted the fallout, right. And advertisers would run from it.
Yeah, but now Walking Dead is the biggest show on television,
right. Yes,
and they're doing that. So it just shows you that people want it.
And Sons of Anarchy, which
just imagine if your kid or my kid was flicking through the channels looking for Mario Brothers or something. And that
Rebel watches me on my blood work show. He sees me get like made up and horrible things happen to me, but he knows it's all fake. He understands, right, okay.
But the idea behind what this was in Walking Dead.
They're still not going to watch Walking Dead yet.
This is insane.
Let me show you something.
Even the guys in Walking Dead, I saw interviews with the producers, and they say, we know some people actually have some of their kids watch this just because they think it's fun, but this is one we do not want
from this
anyone watching.
It was heavy, man.
It was heavy. Oh. And do you watch Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
Do you, Scott?
I fell off 2 years ago.
Oh, my God.
When they went to Ireland?
Ireland was bad.
I hated that season.
Yeah, that was my least favorite season. But it got bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's going on now with what he's doing?
Crazy, man.
And that's on TV is insane.
Yeah, she's the worst. Gemma is the worst.
We got. When is that going to be revealed?
In the last episode.
No, it can't be because you want more.
In the last episode
of
the series.
It has to be the
last.
I know what's going on. It has to be the last episode.
Here's my prediction.
But then it kills you because you want a little more follow-up than just what they're going to give you.
Here's my prediction. Gemma will kill Jax. End of series. Boom. Done. You heard it here first.
You might be right.
That's
she might be the last man, woman standing.
Because you think, okay, Jax is going to kill his mom. I think they're going to pull a twist
she's
going to kill him, and that's going to be the end of the show.
Or Drea Di Matteo might kill Gemma.
Maybe something. But I think Gemma will be the last man standing, like you said, because she's so evil.
Yeah.
I think that Juice is going to kill Gemma.
I don't think so.
Because he wants to get back in with the club.
Well, we know what's going on right now where he's got her hostage. That was the last episode that they showed. He had her outside.
All right. We don't want to break down Sons of Anarchy anymore. All right. Well, listen, we only have we have about 2 minutes left to get in final plugs and pushes to our various shit that we're hawking.
Yeah.
So I don't know shit about anything.
I don't know shit about anything. Chris's new book. That's going to be.
Chris, people will go to the store and look for that.
Chris, you got to name your fourth book.
I will.
You know you're going to do a fourth one.
S*T about anything. Kevin Smith had a book called Pure Shit or Total Shit or something like that. Yeah.
So, Chris, give the final push on your stuff.
I look at you. Aren't you a Kevin Smith expert?
You're
a pop culture guy.
Well.
Two minutes and 40
seconds.
The
best in the world at what I have no idea. Great stories about wrestling, rock and roll, and all a bunch of other shit that I know nothing about. Lots of fun.
Are you still going to do any wrestling or no?
Not for now. I'm pretty much booked up until late next year, so.
All right.
Maybe someday.
And Fozzy shows with THS. What's the name of that tour
it's
again?
It's called the Cinderblock Party, and it's on starts November 20th. You gave your thumbs up on it.
Yeah.
November 20th, FozzyRock.com. For all the dates, Talk is Jericho's the podcast. Eddie and Scott have both been on it.
Scott, go ahead. The book is...
The book is I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax. It's out tomorrow. Go get it. I guarantee you will love it. Guaranteed.
Before I forget, real quick, how's the new Anthrax coming, the new music?
Good. We got a ton of material. We're writing again. Charlie and Frankie are going to stay in L.A. a couple extra days around Knotfest, and we'll be working on material and maybe even decide when we'll start recording. But we don't have any kind of date yet or anything like that.
And you're doing some speaking shows still, too?
Not right now. I just did one on Friday. Nothing booked. Yeah, my DVD of my speaking words, though, comes out November 13th.
Did you get that funded?
I
helped. I tweeted for
you. Yeah, my DVD, November 13th, Swearing Words in Glasgow. But the book comes out tomorrow, so help a brother out.
Right, read some books, you bastards.
We're fielding the offers for the Jericho Ian Trunk World Tour.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which will come to your city. We're only going with the biggest agency, CAA and ICM
Bidding
only.
Bidding war starts now. We're looking at the biggest venues. Kufstein, we're looking to come back.
Yes. Every bar and grill we could find. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Go to eddietrunk.com. As always, The Trunk Report is my blog. On Twitter, at Eddie Trunk. On Twitter for Chris, at I Am Jericho. On Twitter for Scott, at Scott.
Scott underscore Ian.
Scott had to get the underscore.
Some asshole
Scott
takes Scott
underscore
again.
Ian. And all my appearances are on the homepage of my website. Many other things going on. Just look at the site for more info and details. New That Metal Show finally coming in February. And I'll have more details about guests and tickets and all that. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.